Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's our mission statement. That's the American mission statement. It's our creed. It's the essence of who we are as a people. We are creatures made by God. God gave us rights. These are rights that government can never give to us. And the beauty of that is that these are rights that government can never take away from us.
A star is born. A star is born. That's Michelle Bachmann. The real deal, as opposed to Palin, the soundbiter. Michelle Bachmann spoke at CPAC. I was stirred watching it on C-SPAN. I said, this woman is the real McCoy. This woman can save the Republican Party from its liberalism. This woman can save this U.S. Constitution of ours from the Marxist-Leninism of Obama. And that's what we're going to talk about today, which is Obama mistrusted because of his actions or because of rabble-rousing on the right? Welcome to the Savage Nation. Let's have Blue Monday right now on the Savage Nation so the people know who they're listening to, where they're listening, and why they're listening. It's our Monday opening.
It's Blue Monday. Got to work, flag or sleeve or deep. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time.
It is the Savage Nation. As I say, I watched Michelle Bachmann speak on at CPAC on TV, and I was stunned by her knowledge of the U.S. Constitution, her passion, and her ability to deliver a speech that's real as opposed to, as I said, Sarah Palin's soundbites. This is the real McCoy. And today I'm going to call for the true constitutionalist, Michelle Bachmann, to run for the presidency with Romney as a vice president. I know this sounds like, oh, big deal, so you said it, Savage, so what? Well, I'll say it. I'm one man, one man's opinion. I have a big audience, third largest radio show in America, the author of numerous bestsellers, and a big one coming out in October that'll be the biggest ever. I'm working on my opus right now. It'll be my last political book and my biggest political book. But I am telling you right now, I said to you for years now, have I not told you it's the women who are going to save America? How many years have I said that to you? How many years have I said to you it's only the women who can save America? And I use the analogy of the early days of cancer in the hospital, children's cancer in the hospitals. I told you that. You remember I told you that story? That 25 years ago, children who had cancer, the poor little things, were in hospitals dying, and they were not dying of cancer, and the doctors said they were, and the mothers of the poor children dying of cancer would come in the hospitals, and they'd say, doctor, my child is dying of starvation, not of the cancer. And the stupid doctor, you know, patronized the mother and said, there, there, dear, go home and take a Milltown. We know better than you. Well, the doctors didn't know better than the mothers. The mothers knew their children were dying of starvation. And why were the children in the hospitals dying of starvation? They were dying because the AMA diet, the ADA diet, the four food group diet, was starving their children to death, starving the children of essential nutrients. The mothers knew it intuitively. And that's why I said, The mothers knew more than the doctors about their children. And the women of America know more about the dangers to their children than do these old men who don't know and don't care. The weasels of Washington have to go. And it's the women like Michelle Bachmann who are going to stand up like the Joan of Arcs of today and lead us out of this mess. And that's why I'm saying today in the Savage Nation, I would like to see Michelle Bachmann announced for the presidency very soon. And I'd like to see Romney as a vice presidential candidate. I know that this is a reversal of what many of you want. I am telling you that Romney is unelectable for two reasons. He is a social liberal. He has the baggage of the Massachusetts health care plan, which is strangely very much like Obama's health care plan, which is about to be dropped on America like a neutron bomb any day now. You thought Obama was finished? I told you otherwise. I said when an animal is cornered, they're very dangerous. Was I right? Yes, I was right. They've come back like a hurricane with a more Marxist health care plan today. And they're going to ram it down your throats no matter how low his ratings go. Because they don't give a damn about ratings. They care only about Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin. They answer only to the higher powers that they grew up with. Make no mistake about it. We are about to lose our republic. And I will tell you this, as goes the health care fight, goes the rest of America. If he is not stopped on this, what is to stop that Marxist-Leninist president of ours from putting in that private security force, that police force, that armed police force that he talked about during the campaign that is better armed than the U.S. military that reports only to him, the Praetorian Guard, the SS. And if you think I'm making it up, I got another guest coming for you. He has to be stopped on health care. You can do it. And how do you do it? You tell your damn congressmen, Democrats, if they vote for this health care plan, you're throwing them out. You will vote for the local undertaker for the Democrat seat rather than these blue dog turncoats. They've got to get the message. Now, I want to turn to something else on the Savage Nation. A lot of else. Oh, a lot of else. Oh, do I want to turn to a lot of else. I want to talk about Obama. And I've been thinking about this long and hard. And I thought to myself this morning, is Obama as bad as we on the conservative media side of the aisle say? Is he this bad? Do we mistrust him because of his actions or his policies or because of pure, unadulterated muckraking and rabble-rousing on the right? Now, the reason I'm willing to open myself up to this discussion is because I want to make sure that I get it right. I understand what is at stake here, and I also understand the power I have. Make no mistake about it. Anybody in the media who has an audience as large as I do has tremendous power of persuasion. Even if that persuasion leads you to an opposite conclusion, it is still a power of persuasion. I am listened to. And strangely enough, I'm listened to perhaps not by as many people as the other two shows ahead of me, but probably more thinking people who don't listen to radio at all, listen to Michael Savage because of my ability to present an argument, present the facts, and to bounce ideas off me. And that means liberals who really want to know what's going on. Many of them don't even know the danger they're in. They don't even know, for example, that ClimateGate is all over the media in the whole world, everywhere but in the U.S. The London papers are covering the ClimateGate collapse every day. The U.S. papers won't cover it at all. Don't you understand you're living in the equivalent of the Soviet Union where one newspaper was produced by the government and was called Pravda, the truth? It doesn't matter if you have 100 different newspapers in America when they're all put out by Gannett with one or two cockamamie editors putting out the garbage. So I ask myself the question, is he mistrusted because of his actual actions? Is Obama really sort of a Bader-Meinhof, Red Brigades type who has smoothed out his act, and now that his rabble has taken over America, they're doing virtually anything that they want to do without apparent violence? That's the one extreme. The other extreme is, come on, the guy is a Robin Hood. He's trying to save the country. He's going to take money back from the pigs and give them to the poor. I told you he's not doing that. That's the popular image. He's robbing from the rich to give to the poor. Obama's just a nice guy who's a Robin Hood, right? That's what you've been told. Well, I say you're wrong. Because if you actually look at it, no poor people have benefited from Obama. The only people who have benefited are on Wall Street and the big banks. The people who put him in power have benefited. So he's not robbing from the rich to give to the poor. He's robbing from the middle to give to the rich. Get it clear. Get it right. and get it right, because this is the last chance you have. Last night I went to dinner with perhaps, I have to say, the finest man I ever met in my life. I don't know how else to put it. I know that's a heck of a statement. I met some decent people in my life. Congressman John Culberson came out from Texas to have dinner with me. And as you know, I'm a very, very private person. I don't do dinners. I don't do speeches. I don't need the limelight. All I need is the God-given ability to get up here and do a show every day. I ask for God's blessing that I can do this every day. I don't have the strength or the desire, really, to schmooze and do all of that stuff. Flew in from Texas. And we had an incredible dinner, and I'll tell you more about it later. But he gave me something. He brought two gifts for me. And of all the things I have collected in my life, they're not particularly of great value. There's no Picassos or Cezannes in my collection. But I have some decent stuff, some bronzes, some paintings, some clocks, some porcelains that I've collected over the years, and ship models. They're nice. Of all the things I have collected in my life, what Congressman John Culberson, conservative Republican of Texas, gave me last night is the one thing that I would like to pass on to my children that I think they're going to want. It's the one thing that I could see 100 years from now being talked about on the Antiques Roadshow. Yes, I had a great-great-great-grandfather named Michael Savage, who was a radio guy. A what? Radio? Oh, yes, that was a medium that we had before telepathy, where people had to turn something on in their house to hear someone talk. Now it's all done by telepathy. And, well, really, what is it worth today? I'll tell you when I come back. You're not going to believe it.
Savage.
It is a Savage Nation. So today I'm going to call for a Bachman-Romney ticket, not a Romney-Bachman ticket. And we'll talk about that later on. We're also going to talk about, is Obama mistrusted because of who he is, meaning his actions, or because of rabble-rousing on the right, as the left would have you believe? And I want to talk about this. Is the suspicion and the doubt about Obama and his minions founded in reality, or based on unfounded suspicions raised by media rabble-rousers? And what do you, the Savage Nation, think? Is this doubt about Obama justifiable, or is he simply a great idealistic man trying to save America from the evils of the Republicans? Are the problems he faces just ones he inherited, as he so often claims, or are they of his own making? Where does he really stand on today's political issues? Is he really in the mainstream of American populists as he presents himself, or is he actually someone from the fringe of Marxism, the worldwide socialist movement, as many of us suspect? We'll talk about that not only today, but for the rest of the week on the Savage Nation. Now, I want to go back to last night. So Congressman Culberson comes up, and he's a Texas. Now, remember, I live in California. There's not one congressman that I know of in this state who I can talk to. Congressman Culberson is the only congressman in the entire Congress who sent a letter on my behalf to the United Kingdom and to the State Department. He stood up for me. And I'll tell you something I said to him as I got in my car outside the North Beach restaurant in the rain. I said, Congressman, I'm very moved by our meeting. I said, you stood up for me when no one else would. And I said, I learned something in my life, if I've learned anything in my 7 decades. I said, don't go by what people say. Go by what they do. And I said, you're the only one who did something for me. In these dark hours, you were the only one there. He said, Michael, that's exactly what I'm saying about Obama. Don't go by what he says. Go by what he does. And he kept saying over dinner how short the time was, how little time we had left to save the Republic. And what a part he said I am playing in the saving of this country. He wrote me a letter. I can't do it all at once, but I want to go back to what he gave me that I told you will be on at the Antique Roadshow 100 years from now. It's a diorama, a plaque. On the top of it is a daguerreotype of 5 men. They look like the roughest rough riders you ever see in your life. The kind of guys, if you met outside of a bar, believe me, you'd run away. The kind of men who built America. Privates Peter Kendall, William Lynch, Felix Kennedy, Thomas Birney, Walter Wood of Springfield, Texas, enlisted in Houston September 12, 1861, in Company C, 8th Texas Cavalry, Terry's Texas Rangers. Their dress consisted simply of flannel shirts, very ancient trousers, jack boots with enormous spurs, and black felt hats ornamented with the Lone Star of Texas. They looked rough and dirty, but were extremely civil to me. Lieutenant Colonel A. Fremantle, Coldstream Guards, Diary, Brownsville, Texas, April 2, 1863. In the diorama, there is a silver star, a Lone Star hat insignia. The congressman told me he only knows of seven of them. It was worn by a soldier in the Army of the Republic of Texas in 1839. That's inside this diorama. On the right side, inside this case, was is a 50 caliber musket ball found inside the walls of the Alamo in the early 1900s, which matches the caliber of the Texans rifles and the Kentucky long rifles carried by Davy Crockett's Tennesseans. On the bottom, with the state of Texas seal, it says, presented to Michael Savage with gratitude for his fearless defense of individual liberty and America's borders, language, and culture from Texas Congressman John Culberson. This is the greatest treasure I now own in material things, the greatest treasure I own. He also gave me a plaque commemorating my appointment as an admiral in the Texas Navy, which I'm going to put on my boat, signed by the governor of Texas, Perry, which is pretty amazing stuff. Isn't it odd that I live in California and I need to speak to a congressman from Texas to have any sense of what I do in the world and its value? Isn't it odd that in this great state of California there is no diversity of representation? It's all far left politicians who have wrecked California and turned it into Argentina. They have destroyed California. Boxer, Feinstein, Schwarzenegger, it doesn't matter what party they're affiliated with, they've wrecked the state. They have catered to the illegal alien. They've catered to the illegal alien, the criminal illegal alien. They care more about them than they do about the taxpayer. They've raped us. They've robbed us. They've killed us. They've destroyed the Golden Goose. And look how they sit up there like they didn't have anything to do with it. How do you like them bananas? It doesn't matter, Democrat, Republican. It doesn't matter. Don't you understand there's a revolution brewing in America? What the hell do you think the Tea Parties are about? What the hell do you think the anger has been at the town halls? You think we, the people who pay the taxes and go to work every day, don't know what the hell these politicians are? They're gangsters. They're gangsters. We've watched enough movies to know criminals when we see them. If they take your money and rob it and don't spend it on infrastructure and it goes nowhere, what the hell would you call them? Public servants? There's a revolution going on in this country. The question is, will this Red Brigade, Biden-Meinhof crowd in the White House, pretending to be middle-of-the-roaders, have their way, or will we the people prevail? You decide.
Savage.
So, here we are, sitting here watching the world go by. And many of you think it's just rhetoric, but you don't understand what's going on. Sure, we have a budgetary crisis. California is bankrupt because they cater to illegal aliens. We understand that. They could straighten out the budget. You give me the budget for 90 days, I'll balance the books in the state of California. Close the hospitals, I'll save you $15 billion. Put a state trooper, a highway patrolman in every hospital in the state. Period. Deport the illegal aliens in prison. What do you think the prisons cost you? $50,000 a year for these gangbangers? Send them back to Mexico, Honduras, El Salvador, and Nicaragua. Close down half the prisons. You don't have to keep them here at $50,000 a year. But the prison union guards won't let you do that. So he's trapped at every turn by somebody. So you can't govern anything when you have special interest determining what you're going to do. What about the pensions? Are they supportable? Of course not. They were given out in the 90s when there was no tomorrow. Well, today is tomorrow. Today is yesterday's tomorrow. Here's the future that you thought would never come. Cut every pension by 20%. I don't care who it is across the board. That's all. One less trip to Disneyland. One less trip to Las Vegas. One less cruise. That's the end of it. 20% less to people pensions that we can't afford. That's going to happen whether you like it or not. I don't care whether you take the medicine from me or not. Uncle Mike's telling you what's coming. But let's put aside the money for a minute. The fundamental difference between Michael Savage and the people on the right who see what's going on, those of you who are drinking the leftist Kool-Aid, so to speak, you don't understand that the government is not better equipped to make choices than a country's own citizens are. You don't understand that a government is not entitled to our earnings, and that what we get back is simply a gift from them. You think that the government knows best how to spend it, not us? You think we don't know how to spend the money we make, even though we're the ones who made it, not these dummies in Washington? Every time your government gets control of another right that we have and another choice that we have, whether it be on health care or finance or family or how we worship, it takes the life out of each one of these particular rights and choices. Eventually, the entire, all of our freedoms decay. And as their power increases, our freedom decreases. It's an inverse proportion. Don't you understand that? The more power that Obama aggrandized to himself, and believe me, it didn't start with him. The imperial presidency did not start with Obama, but I'm telling you where we're going now is a frightening tomorrow. 'Tis not a far, far better place than we have ever gone. Believe me, 'tis not a far, far better place than this country has ever gone. And we will talk about it. And when Congressman Culberson sits across from me and we're having a dinner and he says, Michael, the time is very short. We have very little time to save this republic. I mean, he said it to me five times. I said, well, who else in the Republican Party believes this? He said, a few. I said, give me their names. Give me the names. He said, well, the guys from Georgia are great, the congressmen from Georgia. I brought up some senators, DeMint, Jeff Sessions. He said, they're great guys. But there is a core of conservatives still left in the Republican Party. You never hear from them. Instead, you hear about the guys like the middle of the roaders, let us say, the compromisers who think that that's the future of America. It's this kind of compromise that got us where we are today. It was George Bush turning us into a fiscally socialist nation. I saw that coming. Prescription drugs for seniors, I howled like a wolf, no. No Child Left Behind, I howled like a wolf, no. So you say, well, the bailouts for banks under Obama are worse. Yes, they are, but it didn't start with him. It started with Bush, but you were Bush bots, many of you. You went along and you got along. You thought that he was good, he was going to do the right thing. He didn't do the right thing. Bush was a New World Order socialist, period, end of story. And now look where we are. So I'm sitting there and we're enjoying ourselves. I look, you know what I do now when I get up? I swear to God, I look out every day. I look out my window or I walk in the street or take a bike ride and I say to myself, do you have any idea how lucky you are? Do you have any idea how lucky you are living the way you do in this country at this time? Look ahead 5 years under this guy. Take the arc of Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, Barack Obama, and the 10 Marxist-Leninist czars, and you take that arc and you let it go forward, you'll be living in a prison camp if this agenda is not stopped, I say to myself every day. They could arm the Goon Squad. They could arm the Black Panthers with guns. They could arm the Acorn Goons with guns. You say it's right-wing paranoid extremism? Fine! You know, even paranoids are right sometime, as Henry Kissinger said. It has happened in other places that were democracies. It happened in Germany. You don't know it. Germany was a democracy during World War I. It was not a fascist dictatorship. Did you know that? Did you know that even though we were fighting Germany in World War I, they were not a dictatorship? They were a democracy? Do you know that? Do you have any idea what happened in Germany? Could happen here, only it'll come from the left, not from the right. What's the difference? Socialism is socialism. A dictatorship is a dictatorship. That's what we're talking about. So I go back to the plaque and the diorama he gave me. The 50 caliber ball from the Alamo, the Lone Star insignia from the hat of a soldier in the Army of the Republic of Texas from 1839. It means something to Congressman Culberson. It's very real to him. And I, being a guy from New York, it's like, oh, what's this Civil War stuff? What did it really mean? Well, I've come to understand all of this stuff. Come to understand things I never understood when I was 17 or 18 or 28 or 38 or 48. Things I understand now I never understood. So he gave me a letter. Dear Dr. Savage, this will always be remembered as a pivotal moment for America when we will either become just another bankrupt European socialist country like Greece or Argentina, or when true patriots took back our nation and restored our prosperity, our pride and our power, he wrote, and our freedom. By restoring the American Republic our founders created, you will be remembered as one of the vital leaders at this historic moment who helped save our nation and protect our freedom by restoring the America we know and love. Thank you for your fearless defense of freedom and of all the core principles that have made America the greatest nation in the history of humanity. Whenever I feel disappointed or disheartened by the weasels in Washington, remember this is from a congressman, I am always rejuvenated by my family, my daughter, and by holding a Texas hat star worn by a young man who sacrificed and suffered much more than me to protect his family's freedom and to preserve Texas and the American Republic. Thank you for your courage and your leadership. Sincerely, John Culberson. I mean, I'll frame this too. It's a great honor for me to have this. Kid from the Bronx, it means a lot to me. So we're sitting there, we're eating the prosciutto, having a good time. I said, Congressman, let's go down into the prosciutto room. My friend Lorenzo, we went down, look at the pigs hanging there, curing. And a waiter shows us the pigs hanging there in the prosciutto room. I said, don't worry, Congressman, they don't put their political enemies up on a hook if they don't like them down here. Well, we all had a big laugh drinking some wine. He says, the waiter says, each one of these hams is worth $2,000. The sweetest ham I ever ate in my life, sliced up like that. But it was a night to remember. Forget the food. Forget the banter. We're talking about a critical time in American history. You think this is all a hysterical joke, what's going on in the country? The country has been seized by a radical Marxist-Leninist cabal. That's statement one. Statement two, most Americans don't know it, but they sense something is wrong. They sense that the man is trying to change the course of America, not for the better of the average middle-class citizen, but for the betterment of powers outside the United States of America and for people who put him in power. That's the way it is seen. And then there's a core other side, and then there's a vast conspiracy of Republicans trying to steal the Tea Party movement and the conservative movement and say, vote for us, we'll save you, when they were the ones who got us to Obama. I mean, I'm the only one in the media who knew it 10 years ago. Many say it now, but for example, even Glenn Beck, who's held up as a real genius and a real role model, this guy voted for the bank bailouts. This guy was a supporter of the bank bailouts. Now he's pretending to be Mr. Libertarian. Well, this way to the egress. If you want to believe it, go ahead and believe it. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy. He's just cunning. He knows which way the wind blows. He's a real weatherman. And like the real weatherman, he knows which way the wind blows. He knows which way the vane should go. Well, I'm not guided by the wind. I have a firm compass. I'm guided by the lodestar of the U.S. Constitution. And I'm guided by the concept, the credo that I wrote, Borders, Language, and Culture. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com, Borders, Language, Culture. It's been up there for 10 years. Borders, Language, Culture. This congressman is the only one who ever repeated the three words. Now, in all this discussion, all these fake Tea Party guys, there's some real ones. I'm going to have them on the show this week. But the fakers, in my opinion, Dick Armey, faker. In my opinion, ex-Republicans running Tea Parties, fakers. Did they talk about closing the borders and ending this onslaught of illegal immigrants who are flooding America with drugs, with rape, with murder, with every crime known to mankind? Are they talking, any of them, about one out of three prisoners being illegal aliens who came here to rape, to murder, to distribute drugs? Has any one of them talked about turning back the tide of invasion? No. Has one of these talked about language, the English language, as the official language of the land, and stop ballots in 15 languages so they can get non-citizens to vote for these demon cat weasels? No, haven't heard that either. Have they referred to the core cultural principles of America that made this nation great and keep it going to this day? No, they don't talk about it. They talk around these topics. And that's how you judge a politician. Either they mention issues related to borders, language, or culture, or they're full of crap. End of story. Now, let me go back to something personal. I know I'm brash. I know that sometimes I grate people who've never heard me. What the heck is he? I don't like his attitude. I don't like his New York accent. I don't like that he's so pushy. I don't like that he comes at you so hard. I don't like his aggression. Maybe that's all true. But I am a product of my time. I'm a product of my family. I'm a product of the fact that I'm an immigrant son. I'm a product of the fact that I had to rise up from nothing to something. I had to do it, not the government. In fact, the government stood in my way at every turn. The government did nothing for me. In fact, when my turn came to get what I was due because I worked for it, the government said white men need not apply. They said to me, "Some the ACLU wrote a position paper for the then fascist left-wing government of Jimmy Carter, which said some men will have to put their lives on hold so that other men can succeed." Well, I'm one of those men who had to put his life on hold. But unlike others, I didn't fall by the wayside of a broken heart with my broken dreams. I didn't let them kill me. I fought, and I have this. I wrote best-selling books. I didn't rise to this position because the government gave it to me. The government gave me nothing. They stood in my way at every turn. All they did was take from me and block me at every turn. I am an immigrant son. And people don't like me, or they do like me. Many people don't like this pushy New York, brash, aggressive, in-your-face kind of personality, whether it's on the radio or in person. They don't like it. Well, it's too bad. It doesn't matter to me whether you like it. This is who I am. I don't care whether you're a Greek immigrant, an Irish immigrant, or an immigrant from anywhere. How the hell do you think you're going to make it in this country? By letting someone give it to you? You know where you'll end up? As my father would say, the meek shall inherit you know what. He used to sneer at that phrase from the Bible. The meek shall inherit. He used to mock that phrase. He used to say to me, the meek shall inherit you know what. It's what floats up at Coney Island, he said to me, at low tide. He said, that's what the meek shall inherit. He was telling me, don't be meek because they'll step on you. They'll strip you bare and throw you on the third rail of the subway. And don't think it doesn't happen. So this is who I am. Some people can't take it. Some people love it. Why is it that I resonate with people from Texas? And I don't resonate with these effete, wonderful, sophisticated, so nice, good people from California. How come? How come these nice people from San Francisco, who kiss the behinds of drug dealers and criminals in the city of San Francisco, hiding them, protecting them from the federal authorities, these nice pieces of garbage, how come they don't like me? How come they try to throw me off the radio? How come they did throw me off the radio? How did they throw me off the radio? How did I get back on the radio? I was off the air in San Francisco for 4 months. Nobody even knows why it happened or how it happened. No one will cop to it. I know it was political. I know it was done by a top politician. I can't prove it because that's the way the government works. You can't prove anything when they do their dirty deeds. I know that I was blacked out. And they thought that they had me. They thought they killed me. They thought that they ended my career in radio. They didn't want me talking in the city of San Francisco. Yeah, I'm on hundreds of other stations. But it hurt me that I was off the air where I had built an audience over 15 years. It really hurt me. It got me mad. And when I get mad, I get to work. I didn't go sniveling to the FCC. I didn't go hire a lawyer to sue somebody. No, what I did was is I found a third way. And now I'm on a powerhouse of a station in San Francisco. It's all sports. 860 on the dial, except Michael Savage, every afternoon or early evening. It's powerful. It's heard everywhere. How did this happen? Did the government give it to me? Did I go to a diversity officer and say, officer, they took me off the air and I'm a conservative, which is a minority in the city of San Francisco, and I want you to help me. Did I go to the EEOC? Did I go to the ACLU? No, I fought them. And I beat the two giant, the colossi here in the city, who run all of the other talk stations. I beat the colossi. I outsmarted them. I outmaneuvered them, just as I've done all my life and just as I'll do till my last breath. I will fight with everything in me for my rights. No one's going to give me anything. And you must fight for it as well. You say, what the heck are you doing at your age? Why are you doing all this? You know, isn't it time for you to just retire? Stop yelling. You're going to get a heart attack or something. I don't know what I'm going to get. Maybe I'll give you a heart attack instead if you don't like what I say. Maybe I'll get a heart attack. I don't know what's happening. It's up to God at this point. I do the best I can health-wise. I wrote the books on it. I do the vitamins. I do the best I can. And that's the end of it. I'm not going to sit here like a neurotic lunatic worrying about, be moderate, be this, be that. Watch out. Who could live like that? Put the Lone Star on your soul, my friend. Take that imaginary Lone Star that these Texans wore on their hats and put it on your soul and get ready for the battle of your life, because between now and October, and very soon, not even October, very soon, you're going to have the battle of your life. Take a look what Obama did today. Did you hear about that one? Did you hear what the good old Robin Hood just did to you today, what he's trying to do today? Oh, you didn't hear about it. You didn't hear about his new health care plan, which you thought he was finished, when I was the only one in the media who said, look out. Look out for Robin Hood, because Marx Lenin is coming back. And did I warn you that Brown from Massachusetts would join with the Democrats? Who was the one who warned you? Michael Savage. Brown just voted for the jobs bill. He joined the Democrat majority. I told you the guy was a compromising fraud. You didn't listen to me. You all stood up and said, Brown, he's the new Obama. He's the right-wing Obama. Michael Savage, the only one. I am the eye in the sky. I see all. I am the eye in the sky of the great casino called America. I'll be back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. little Rossini, maybe. The crescendo to the last great speech I gave. I can't follow that one with a better one. You'll have to forgive me. Now, what just happened is equal to the earthquake that happened when Brown won in Massachusetts. But you didn't see it coming. I did. That's why I have the show and you don't. That's why you listen and I talk. Did I tell you, was I the only one in the conservative media to warn you that Brown would not be the conservative Robin Hood that you thought he would be? Didn't I warn you? Didn't I say to you he was 8 years in the Senate there in Massachusetts? What are you people kidding me? Just voted with Democrats to advance a jobs bill that the Democrats wanted. Modest job creation bill advanced in the U.S. Senate today as the chamber's newest Republican bucked this party and sided with Democrats on a $15 billion package of tax cuts and highway spending. Brown joined 55 Democrats and two independents to overcome a procedural hurdle that sets up a final vote later this week. Brown was widely hailed as a conservative hero after a surprise victory in Massachusetts last month and gave Republicans enough seats to block most Democratic legislation. But you didn't know what would come. You didn't know that Brown would join the Democrats. You didn't know. You didn't know it. Another rhino who stabbed the people in the back who put him in office. Another weasel of a politician who misled the people with the playboy and the sportsman guy. Another politician. That's the end of his presidential aspirations. He's finished. Another rhino who went down in the wind. Down. Toss the Fox propaganda machine. Will still hold him up as doing the right thing. They'll put him on the middle of the road Fox shows. And they'll try to sell you the fact that this G. Willikers, G. Wiz guy is really a conservative. I told you the right-wing euphoria was not going to last. I told you don't go into Mardi Gras. I warned you. No one else did. I am the eye in the sky. No one else.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Story, this American story. John Quincy Adams went on to say in his speech, never before in the history of man had there been an example of a government directly and expressly instituted on this principle of consent by the governed. What a concept. I mean, just imagine. You mean like if two-thirds of the American people repudiate a policy like the job-killing government takeover of health care? You mean like government might listen? Yes! That's exactly what the founders were thinking. Exactly.
Only the women can save us. Men have their hats on backwards, or they're glued to the porn machines called computers. Only the women can save us. They're the ones keeping the families together. They may as well try to keep the good ship America from sinking on the iceberg of government. The government is not America. Do you understand that? How about for a seminal definition? We are America. The government is not America. They make it sound as though they are America. I don't think that you understand how important that definition is, the one I just came up with. It's the second best to my borders, language, culture. We are the government. They are not the government. We are America. They are not America. They are the government. It's different. When the government represents the will of the governed, then they're America. But when you have a government that has hijacked the principles of America, number one, and the will of the people, number two, then what does that tell you who your government is? Huh? You want to go down the list? You want to talk again all over from ground zero about the lies, the deceit, the socialism, communism, Marxism, Leninism of Obama and his czars? the fact that ClimateGate, the scandal, the fraud is known all over Europe but not in America because the newspapers, which are in cahoots with the government, won't touch ClimateGate. Cap and tax, the mayor wants to push it down your throat. The mention of a bankruptcy and they won't stop the illegal aliens from pouring across the border. No, 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 none of that matters to you. All you think is that he is the Robin Hood that you've been waiting for all your life. To rob from the rich, greedy pig Republicans and give to the poor. Because you were raised on the 60s nonsense. The myth, the mythos of the 60s, the mythos of the 60s still plays in the heads of the drug addicts of the liberal movement. I don't care if they're 70. The myths of the 60s live in the heads of the 70s. That's right. The myths of the 60s. The myths of the 60s. Every business owner is a crook. Every worker is a prince. Yeah, the myths of the 60s. All the little Mugabes in the Mitsubishis in the United States of America. All the little Mugabes and the little petty Marxes in their Toyota Priuses riding around waiting for the revolution, thinking it won't touch them. Well, here we are. I am the eye in the sky of the good ship America. I see it all. I was the first one to warn you that Brown was not to be trusted, and now he's being called Benedict Brown. Who am I talking about? Benedict Brown, the great hero from Massachusetts, the guy from the Playboy or Sports Illustrated, the naked white male that the people went goo-goo, gaga, the Mardi Gras guy that everyone went crazy for. He's the next president, you said. Yeah, Brown for president. Well, maybe I watch too much television, but I know reality. Maybe television helps you know reality. See, I watched The Brotherhood on Showtime for so many seasons, I said, wait a minute. The guy's been in the Massachusetts State Senate for 8 years, and he's not a politician? He was made out of whole cloth the day before the election. Then he got Kennedy's seat. He's going to do everything the conservatives ever dreamed of. I said, no, he's not going to give. You'll get 60-40. I didn't know you'd get 30. I didn't know you'd get 30%. That's if you're going to get 30% out of this guy. He's already been turned by Obama. They did a trade-off with him on something. The minute I heard the next day he wanted to play hoops with Obama, I said, goodbye. Goodbye, Charlie. I watched too many installments of the Brotherhood and then too many installments of The Sopranos for my own good. I recognize that. But here I am. I wasn't wrong, was I? Did I warn you about Brown? Benedict Brown, who voted with Democrats hours ago? You didn't hear that one? Oh, yeah, Scott Brown, Benedict Brown, breaks with GOP, supports the, quote, jobs bill. Big government jobs bill. Mike Savage, the only one who warned you would happen. That's right. So you can reject me, you can hate me, you can find me abrasive, aggressive, brash, outspoken in your face, not to your liking, not sensitive like the good people of San Francisco, not sensitive like the Upper East Side libs, who are so polite with one another. Yeah, not like any of those people. Still too much of the street in me, I guess. You know what I'm saying? Still too much of the street, but I have a tuxedo on my soul, let me tell you. Some of them wear tuxedos, and you know what they're wearing inside? Filthy garments that can't be cleaned. On their souls are filled with the dirtiest of rags. Lepers wouldn't wear the rags on the soul of most of these people who wear the tuxedos at these parties with the politicians. So maybe I'm a little brash, I admit it. But inside, I have a beautiful tuxedo on my soul. That's all you got to know. And I see things as they are. Rarely have I been wrong. And that's the end of the story. Good night. Thank you for listening. Or goodbye. No, that's not the end of the show. I am telling you that I have today endorsed Michelle Bachmann for the presidency. Now, she's not running. Doesn't matter. Doesn't mean it. I wanted to run. I found a new hero, Michelle Bachmann. I heard her speak. I said, oh, my God. She sounds like Sarah Palin, but what she says is rings true to me. She told the story of a U.S. ship that was torpedoed in the Atlantic by the Nazis and the bravery of four chaplains. She talked about the Constitution, unlike Palin, who reads sound bites. Listen to clip one, please.
In 1943, 67 years ago, just last week, 902 American young GI boys crossed the Atlantic Ocean on a World War II transport ship. They were one of three ships in a convoy. They were 100 miles west off of Greenland. It was 1 o'clock in the morning when a periscope came up out of the waters. It belonged to a Nazi German submarine. The periscope took aim, and it fired at the flank in the icy waters off the coast of Greenland. It hit the starboard side of the ship. Instantly, the explosion occurred. Young GIs, many of them, were killed in a matter of seconds below deck. The power was knocked out. The radio was knocked out. As you can imagine, panic, chaos set in with these boys. Men jumped the ship into the few life boats that there were, some of them in life jackets. But on deck, there stood four chaplains. One was a Catholic priest, another a Jewish rabbi, two were Protestant. They were calm. They were courageous. They called to the young boys. Many were pleading. They were crying. They were praying. But the chaplains preached courage. Courage, men. Courage. They opened a storage locker. They took out the remaining life jackets that they could find, and they handed them out, praying, saying, courage, holding the hands of these young men, saying, put them on. They handed out the life jackets until there were more men than jackets. And wordlessly, the four chaplains removed their jackets and put them on the fearful, shaking bodies of the young GIs. Later, witnesses recorded that the four chaplains took their arms and gathered around one another, and they held on to each other. It took less than 20 minutes from the time the torpedo hit the ship until the ship slid into the icy water. They held on to each other, and they cried out to the young men, courage, boys, hold on. They prayed for the boys. They prayed for the survivors. And they prayed for those who were lost. And they prayed until the chaplains were no more. And of the 902 brave American GIs on board that night, 672 died. In one of the greatest acts of valor, the four chaplains demonstrated clearly what the Holy Scripture says to us. Greater man hath no love than this, but that he lay down his life for his friend. It is of this suffering and of this self-sacrifice that our nation was built upon. It was this that granted us our liberty. It was this that granted us our self-government. They chose greatness for us rather than decline. That is our history. That is the American story.
Michelle Bachmann, A Star is Born. I am calling for a Bachmann-Romney ticket. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome to the Voice of Freedom here on the Savage Nation. We're living through the great days of the United States of America. Tomorrow, I can't guarantee you. No one can. Not with this gang in the White House. Let the people be damned, eh? The consent of the governed, huh? Sure, the consent of the governed. Look, when you were raised on the ethos and the mythos of the 1960s, as Obama was, as Rahm Emanuel was, as David Axelrod was, I know all about the books that I heard. You know, you all know the Alinsky. We heard that before. Let's go beyond Alinsky. That's baby stuff. Let's talk about Biden-Monhoff and the Red Brigades. I mean, what do you need? You don't need domestic terrorism to say, well, wait a minute, what are you talking about? The Biden-Monhoff gang was kidnapping and knocking people off, hijacking planes. That's right. That's what you do when you don't have control of the reins of government. But when you have control of the reins of government, you don't have to kidnap. You don't have to hijack. You own the Air Force. What do you got to hijack? And then you do it slowly. You don't have to scream and yell and rant and rave. You don't have to threaten anyone. The people don't want it? Too bad. You're like Chavez. You do what you want anyway. And then slowly you get control of the media, which you own anyway. And slowly but surely the schmucks come around, and those who don't, you label terrorists, right-wing extremists, fascists, enemies of the revolution, counter-revolutionary. It just goes down the list like that. And before you know it, you're living in an absolute dictatorship with silent bloodshed. That's how it works. It doesn't start with bloodshed necessarily. Some revolutions do. Some end in bloodshed, but start with nice rhetoric, advertising slogans. But they end the same way. All revolutions end the same way. So we're talking about, is Obama mistrusted because of his actions, his policies, or because of rabble-rousing on the right by guys like me? I also talked about dinner with one of the finest men, if not the finest man I ever met, Congressman Culberson, last night in a North Beach restaurant. I endorsed the Bachman-Romney ticket for president. I have not yet even done my movie review. This is a show that I could talk for 10 hours. But actually, I'm breaking my habits, and I'm going to a small dinner tonight for the congressman at an undisclosed location. I'll tell you why I'm going. I'm going because I want to go to honor him. I'll tell you why else I'm going. I want to see how these things work, because I'll probably start putting these dinners on myself for conservative congressmen and senators. If I can organize something. I don't know how you do these things, how much money, I don't know how it works. I really don't. I'm not into the whole scene. But here we are. Got the plaque. Got excited. Found a Sauvignon Blanc I could drink. Lorenzo makes one. I didn't get a headache. I mean, that to me is a miracle. I can drink wine again. I feel liberated. I said, Lorenzo, do you use malolactic fermentation? No, I don't use a... No malolactic fermentation. I said, good. Thank God. No headache-o. No malolactic-o, no headache-o. That's all I know. Because I gave up on the New Zealand wines. They became too fruity. I don't know, it was with the lemon-lime. I felt like I was drinking 7-Up. Years ago when I used to drink wine, I'm slipping into the food now. Okay, I do it. I can't find a good white wine anymore. 20 years ago, I used to drink, if I was lucky, I went to someone's house, they had a Grand Cru Chablis. We drank a lot of French Chablis when it was really good. Then there was the Grand Cru Chablis, which a professor friend had. I never heard anything like it. Then there was Batard Chasson. It was unbelievable, white wines then. Then all of a sudden, something happened with white wine. They became, I don't know what they did to them, creamy, fruity. Sorry to tell you, a lot of the children who grew up drinking soda started drinking wine. They didn't like the actual taste of wine. They wanted a soda with alcohol. So it's hard to find, you know. There's no such thing. And New Zealand used to make a great, when it was the Marlboro New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, it was a different story with a slight tinge of the limey in it, you know. Even though the limey's made it, it was a slight tinge of limey. Then all of a sudden now it's like soda. It's like lemon limey. It's like drinking on a machine in a it's like going for lemon limey in a Lois Pitkin. So here I am, the prosciutto. I'm on a low-fat diet. I'm eating prosciutto. Why? It tastes good. So I'll live a second less. Congressman liked it. I didn't know what he would eat. I said, what are you eating? I ate before he got there. He doesn't know it. Congressman, I'm sorry to admit it. I got there early. I'm not, I'm brash and I'm aggressive. I am. I also do what I want when I want it, so long as I don't bother anybody. I ate before he got there. Say, oh, aren't you going to wait for the congressman? No, I'm starving. I want to eat now. So I said, bring me my eggplant, no cheese. Bring me some prosciutto. Bring me a couple of glasses of wine. And I said, clear the table before he gets here so it doesn't look like I pigged out before he got there. But I did. I don't like going to parties and waiting for food. I get like a low blood sugar job. Anyway, here we are. Look, I did heavy politics and I have a real treat coming up for you that you don't know about. That's right. We have a new star coming to the Savage Nation. Michelle Bachman's going to be live on this show the minute I come back. Never met her. But boy, when I saw her speaking on C-SPAN at CPAC, I said, she's the real deal. This is not someone who's going to look across the Aleutian chain and see Russia and say that's her foreign policy experience. I read she has four children of her own that she raised and something like 26 foster children in her life. What? And she has a law degree? Now you're talking here. Wow, who is this woman? Well, we'll find out more right here on The Savage Nation. I don't know what she wants next, but she ought to run for anything she wants because the field is wide open and it's full of Benedict Browns. Now that we know Benedict Brown can't win for the presidency, he committed Harry Carey today. Oh, yep, the Brotherhood got him. The Brotherhood got him. Wasn't exactly the Skull and Bone Society that old Benedict Brown joined, but it was something very akin to it.
Savage.
If we take one person and make it our priority to utilize what we know is true, the power of persuasion to persuade one person at a time and will take back Washington, D.C. So I'm excited. Are you?
Well, that is a new star for me, and that is a true constitutionalist, Michelle Bachmann, who I frankly, I mean, I watched her work, and I was amazed at how she stood up to some of these old guard guys. But when I saw her speak at CPAC on television, and she moved me with her speech, I don't get moved that easily. I'm in the talk business, so I don't get moved too easily. She moved me, and I said, this woman believes every word she's saying. She's not reading sound bites. She didn't go to a focus group to see what to say. And I'm very proud to tell you that we now have live on the Savage Nation Michelle Bachmann, who is in the United States Congress, representative of Minnesota's 6th Congressional District and a member of the Republican Party. Michelle Bachmann, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage, I am so honored to be on your show. Thank you. I'm just thrilled and blown away that you're having me on tonight. So thank you.
Well, I can't believe I'm the one who's honored to have you on. I mean, your speech about the four the two reverends and the rabbi and the priest that went down with the ship. I couldn't believe what you were moved by that speech, weren't you? You were choked up by it. Was that a personal story in any way, Michelle?
It's not a personal story in that it's someone that I personally was related to, but I had a gentleman had related the story to me, and I wanted to know more about it. So I researched it, and the more I researched, the more moved I was because of the selfless action. And it was literally, like you said, a Jewish rabbi. And the Jewish rabbi, there's parts that I left out. He personally knew what he was going to do. He knew he was going to give up his life so that another GI could be saved. He took his gloves off his hands. That's the first thing he did, and handed them to a GI and said, soldier, I have another pair. Please take mine. He didn't have another pair. He knew that he was going to lay down his life personally so that one young soldier could live. It's the most selfless story of valor, I think, that I had ever heard. And I thought, one thing we don't hear a lot of, Michael, is the greatness of our country, the greatness of the sacrifice that Americans have given for our generation. And that's what I wanted to do, is remind people we are a great people with a great history, and we need to be reminded of that greatness, because that really is endemic of who we are.
Yeah, I agree with you. Congresswoman, you are a Republican and a real constitutionalist. Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes,
if I say
absolutely.
A true constitutionalist, that would define, I think, your motivation or your philosophy. I went to dinner last night with a great congressman, as I mentioned on the show, Congressman Culbertson from Texas, and he told me there is a core of people in the Republican Party who are still strict constitutionalists, like yourself, I think, who can save the country. But having said that, I want to talk about the president and what he's doing, bringing back the healthcare monster just when we thought it was over. I knew it wasn't over, and I said when an animal is cornered, they're even more dangerous. Now he comes back with something even greater than it was before. What does this really mean for America? Is it the loss of freedom that the right really fears, or is this all rhetoric?
No, what it means is that they don't care one bit about what the people want or what the people think, and it demonstrates that it's never been about health care. It's never been about bringing down the cost or competition. It has always been, from the very beginning, about government having more control over the economy, but more control over our lives, because as you know and as you have stated on your show, government will control our personal health care decisions from conception, essentially, until natural death. Think of that. Think of what that means. And that's essentially what the president is going forward with. Two-thirds of the American people have fully repudiated what he's coming out with this week. And so that's what this demonstrates. The president really is not in touch with the heartbeat of the American people. He's in touch with his radical agenda, which is to make sure that government is control of, again, another one-sixth the economy, but even more importantly, over the most personal decisions that we could make over our life.
You know, in your speech, you quote the Declaration of Independence, where you say governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Here I am, you know, in the seventh decade of my life, I thought I read everything. I thought I knew the Constitution. I forgot that phrase, the consent of the governed. We, the people, are the governed. We're supposed to grant them the consent. And yet here you have a president with an extremely radical group around him who say the governed be damned. We are the people who control everything. We don't care what the people think. Where is this leading? How do we, the people, how do we deal with a thing like this? I don't think we've ever had a situation like this in modern times. Do you?
No, I agree. That's why the crux of my speech was we are so blessed to be in a country where we get to choose. We get to choose between American decline and American greatness. Every previous generation from ours for the past 233 years has chosen greatness for themselves and greatness for the next generation. We have been building continually for 233 years on greatness. Now, for the first time in less than 12 months' time, we see an administration that is intentionally choosing decline. And that's why, I don't know if you saw on C-SPAN, I had a chart that was the president's own numbers demonstrating that he is intentionally choosing decline for the nation by the budget that he's put forward. We have
what
never
do you mean by decline? Wait, let me see if I understand this, because I've spoken to people, and many of them say that he's the Manchurian candidate. I mean, I'll level with you and everyone listening. He's actually the Manchurian candidate. He's out to weaken us. He's out to destroy the middle class. He wants to turn us into a two-class society of the ruling class and the workers, along the lines of almost a modified Soviet light state. Is that what you're implying here, Congresswoman?
What I'm saying is that all you have to do is look at the president's budget and see that he is intentionally choosing to overspend by $1.6 trillion. That's more than four times than the worst year that George Bush ever had. So to continually point your finger at George Bush and say what a terrible big spender he was, and he was a big spender, I don't take away from that, and then your prescription is to spend us into certain bankruptcy, and what you're doing then is you're taking the next generation, and you're saying to that generation, you don't have choices. Because quite literally, that generation could be looking at taxation levels that could potentially equal 70, 80, even perhaps 90% of their income would have to go for taxes. When you take into account Medicare, Social Security, all of these expanded entitlement programs that the president wants to continue to expand, let alone the current debt, there is virtually no way that our people can pay the debt off that he's talking about, which means certain inflation, because he'll be forced then to fire up the printing presses, print worthless money, flood it into the money supply, so that essentially our dollar will be worth like what Zimbabwe's dollar is.
Oh, my God. Well, that is a terrible scenario. I mean, we all fear the image of the Deutschmark in a wheelbarrow being led to the bakery to buy a loaf of bread post-World War I Germany. Let's pray to God it doesn't come to that. But where is it going to end? We don't know. China's bailing out of the dollar. I know what the health reform bill really is. I saw Mike Pence's release from August 6, 09, when it was only 1,018 pages. How big is the bill now?
It's over 2,700 pages. It continues
Oh, my God. It's 2,700 pages now. It's unbelievable to me.
It is. And, Michael, realize that's the bare bones, the 2,700 Hydra head that's coming out. The real bill will be written by the bureaucracy within the bureaucratic nightmare, because so much of the bill is vagaries, and the power is given to Kathleen Sebelius at Health and Human Services and a new appointed health care czar. They will be the ones to write the intricate rules and regulations.
Did you say health care czar? He's going to put in a new czar, another Marxist, can now recraft the whole bill? Well, wait a minute now. He's going to do this through the so-called reconciliation process of 51 votes. Are there enough Democrats to risk their political careers on this suicide mission?
Well, that's what we're going to find out. And that's why, unfortunately, your listeners cannot give up. What they have to do is call their member of Congress, call their senator. In fact, I would encourage them, really, to be honest, go to their local district office and in mass, go to their office and tell them, are you out of your mind? What is it going to take you to get you to understand what the word no means? Myself and some colleagues have come together. We wrote the Declaration of Healthcare Independence. You can get it at my site. Michael, you can take it and link to it on your website. Drive your traffic to it. Have your listeners sign up. 100 members of Congress signed up and said...
Hold on. What's your website? I don't need to link it. Give it to me. I'll put it up today.
Okay, it's bachman.house.gov. That's my official website, bachman.house.gov. This declaration is there. 100 members of Congress have signed on. Over 10,000 Americans signed it just in the first couple days. Now, on my website, you can't sign up because I'm legally prohibited from having people sign up on my website. If it's on your website, people could sign up on your website. And what people can do, if they want to, is they can print it out, give it to their member of Congress, but they got to do it soon, and say, look, this is what I think we need to do going forward on health care, not this radical government takeover.
Congresswoman Bachman, I've seen you do your job, and I was very impressed before the CPAC speeches, and I've seen you stand up to some of these old boys, even within the Republican Party. I know this is a tough question. I came out earlier. I don't know if you heard it. Maybe it's zany. To me, I said I would endorse a Bachman-Romney ticket. I know I picked it out of the air because I've said only women can save America a long time ago. You are a true constitutionalist. You're the real deal. Would you be interested in a higher office?
Well, you know, right now, Nancy Pelosi has made me her number one target to get rid of in the United States Congress. And
honor. What an honor that is. That's better than being banned by Gordon Brown's fascist liberal party in Britain.
Well, that's your honor. That is your honor, I guess. She is raising money against me at a lightning clip. Every day, the media hate machine is on my case daily in Minnesota, in my state. She's recruited her candidate. This is extremely nasty, and these people play for keeps. They're already running.
Wait a minute. So do we. Let me tell you something. My group is a little bigger than that group of fanatic hacks. I've got 10 million listeners, and believe me, when they hear this, they're not going to like it. We're going to do everything we can for you, Congresswoman Bachman. I want to go into what it is that she hates about you. What does Nancy Pelosi hate? Let's see. She hates the fact that you're a constitutionalist. That I understand because she is a New World Order type. She hates the fact that you believe in the people. She hates the people and has contempt for them. I suppose she hates the fact that you pointed out that she flies in government Air Force jets and you don't. I guess she hates the fact that you actually have a law degree in tax law, and she has no degree at all whatsoever in this area. And does she also hate the fact that you raised four children and you had foster care for 23 other children? Are those all negatives to the Grand Dame of San Francisco?
I think the main thing she hates is that I take her on, and President Obama and Harry Reid and their agenda that's a disaster for the country. That's what they hate, because what I do, Michael, is I quote back to them what they say and then attack the premises of their arguments. And that bothers them so much. And so then they revert then to name-calling and all the rest. And so now they're running the TV ads. They've got a big radio campaign because I brought up that we have to reform Social Security and Medicare because of the bankrupting nature that it has with our current budget. And so now they just put a big thing out that said that I have given them a Valentine, and they are running with it. And so, I mean, this is...
Who are they running? Don't even mention the person's name. Are they running some far-left hack in your district? Is that who they dug up?
Yeah. They have recruited their candidate, and they're just funneling money to their candidate.
All right, well, if money is the mother's milk of politics, let's do what we can for you. Can people donate on your website? Is that how they help you, Congresswoman?
Yes, they can go to michellebachman.com, and Michelle is with one L, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, and Bachman is two N, B-A-C-H-M-A-N-N, michellebachman.com. And yes, money is the main thing. She spent $9.6 million against me before when I was not her number one target.
Oh, my God. In your district, $9.6 mil to destroy you because you speak for the people? So what are they going to spend now? What, any amount of money to destroy you? Is that what they're doing?
Any amount of money is what they will do. Remember, this is Al Franken territory. This is Al Franken, Walter Mondale, Paul Wellstone. This is the kind of neighborhood. I am the first Republican woman ever to get elected out of Minnesota. We are a tough neighborhood, and that's why she knows that I am vulnerable, because we can be an extremely far-left state, and our news media, of course, is extremely weighted toward the left view. And so
absolutely. Every day you're the enemy. The constitutionalist is the enemy, and of course the internationalist is the friend. I know how it works. Well, we'll do what we can. We're going to link you up on michaelsavage.com. Would you be interested in coming out to the San Francisco area for a fundraiser at any point between now and the election?
I'd be there in a heartbeat. I love that city by the bay, and so I'd be there in a heartbeat.
Well, let me see if I can learn how to do that, and if I can personally do it, I will. I will try to organize such an event for you, Congresswoman, because I have to put my energy and my heart where my beliefs are. We're fighting a battle, and we don't have much time left, do we? We don't have much time left at all, not when we have this Marxist-Leninist group that has seized the power in this government. That's how I see it. I'm not asking you to join me in that rhetoric. I don't want it to be used against you because I'm not running for office. I'm only running for the truth. Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, are there any words that you'd like to leave us with at this time for the American people? What would you say to them if you could? What words would you have for them?
I would say be encouraged because we have the example of our founders and every generation of decent Americans from 1776 to present day who have chosen the life of self-sacrifice and suffering so that the next generation could be better off than they were. We are going to continue that chain and hold on. Don't necessarily listen to the mainstream media. Listen to people that you trust. That's why you're listening to this radio show. You're choosing where you believe you can find the truth. Choose those alternatives to get your information. Band together. Now is when we organize. We have enough time. And if we can persuade even just one more person toward our side, if nothing else, encourage them to listen to this show every day. If we can persuade one person, these elections won't be close. And our son in medical school did that with his roommate, who was a San Francisco liberal. And he patiently used persuasive arguments on his roommate. And his roommate today is a very strong conservative. And so let's make that our challenge. And this November, the elections won't even be close. And we'll begin taking back our country. And in 2012, we will take the presidency as well, and we can turn this around.
MichelleBachmann.com, MichelleBachmann.com. God bless you. We'll have you back on the show very frequently. Keep up the good fight. You're a very inspiring, beautiful person. Thank you very much, Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Well, you've inspired me. Thank you so much, and I'll be on the show.
Good, 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 good. Take care, my friend.
Savage.
Well, this has been an unprecedented couple of hours on the Savage Nation. I've taken no callers for the first time in many years. I don't know how long it's been. I had one caller, and that was Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann on the Savage Nation. I'm so excited by the dinner last night, by the fact that I have almost rejuvenation of belief in some players within the Republican Party who I have faith in. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? Because great things can happen with a small group of people who are real believers and real fighters. You understand that? We're also seeing almost the hand of God in many areas. I told you last year when Obama couldn't get back from the so-called summit in Europe on fake global warming, when he could hardly land at the airport, that it was God's hand laughing at him and laughing at all of the phonies about the cap and tax brigade. And today, a once famous actress, it's reported in the New York Post, it says transsexual club performer vomits on Susan Sarandon. Now, if that's not symbolic of the left, here's a far-left lunatic who's sitting in a burlesque club and a transsexual pukes on her. And she sits there smiling, they say, like nothing happened. I guess she thought they were delivering the hors d'oeuvres. If that's not symbolic of where they're at, I'd like to know what is.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
got to work like a slave on me.
It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
Oh, Tuesday, I'm so tired, got no time to play.
Well, today is a very big day. I mean, the big hero, the new star of the conservative movement, as far as I'm concerned, is not Sarah Palin, who is the 14-carat variety. The 22-carat gold star conservative is the new hero, Michelle Bachmann, at the CPAC convention. This woman gave a speech, this congresswoman, that stirred me to my core. She herself almost was reduced to tears during the speech, and we're going to play a piece of that today, the end of her speech about what it was to sacrifice in World War II to have the freedoms we have today, and how we all have to sacrifice today to fight this juggernaut of socialism that we are facing from Obama. Now, speaking of the juggernaut of socialism we're facing from Obama, I really could not wait to get on the air today to talk about a dinner I went to last night, a private dinner between myself and one of the finest men I've ever met in my life, who was Congressman John Culberson of Texas. Needless to say, a Republican, but a real Republican, a conservative who has fought the good fight all these years. And he wrote me a letter, which he gave me, a hand-carried letter that he carried from Texas. It was just a wonderful moment for me. It goes like this. Dear Dr. Savage, this will always be remembered as a pivotal moment in America when we will either become just another bankrupt European socialist country like Greece or Argentina, or when true patriots took back our nation and restored our prosperity, our pride, and our power, and our freedom by restoring the American Republic our founders created. Dr. Savage, you will be remembered as one of the vital leaders at this historic moment who helped save our nation and protect our freedom by restoring the America we know and love. Thank you for your fearless defense of freedom and of all the core principles that have made America the greatest nation in the history of humanity. Whenever I feel disappointed or disheartened, he writes, by the weasels in Washington, I am always rejuvenated by my family, my daughter, and by holding a Texas hat star worn by a young man who sacrificed and suffered much more than me to protect his family's freedom and to preserve Texas and the American Republic. Thank you for your courageous leadership. Sincerely, John Culberson. This is a letter I will frame and keep to the end of my days. And now, speaking of that, this man, Congressman Culberson, carried a few things on the plane for me. Now, one of them I have in my hand right now. It is a framed diorama. On the top is a picture of five of the toughest Americans I've ever seen in ragtag outfits. And they were members of Terry's Texas Rangers. They were in Company C, 8th Texas Cavalry, Terry's Texas Rangers. And they have names. These guys look like so tough. You look at them and you know you better not cross these guys. And it says, their dress consisted simply of flannel shirts, very ancient trousers, jack boots with enormous spurs, and black felt hats ornamented with the Lone Star of Texas. They looked rough and dirty, but were extremely civil to me. Lieutenant Colonel A. Fremantle, Coldstream Guards, Diary, Brownsville, Texas, April 2, 1863. But now this diorama gets better. On the left side, indented in the frame, is a Lone Star hat insignia that was worn by a soldier in the Army of the Republic of Texas in 1839 and 40. The congressman told me this is only one of seven that he knows to exist in the world. On the right side of the diorama, embedded in the frame, is a dropped 50 caliber musket ball that was found inside the walls of the Alamo in the early 1900s and matches the caliber of the Texans rifles and the Kentucky long rifles carried by Davy Crockett's Tennesseans. The bottom of it has the seal of the state of Texas, and it says, presented to Michael Savage with gratitude for his fearless defense of individual liberty in America's borders, language, and culture, from Texas Congressman John Culberson. It's astounding. And I said to him, Congressman, of all the possessions that I have, there's one that I know my son is going to want, not the paintings I've collected or the statues or the pottery. I said, this is going to be the one thing that he's going to want. He was so moved by it, Beowulf. It was astounding.
Wow. That's amazing. What a tribute.
Well, that was only one thing. Then he gave me something else. The state of Texas, to all to whom these presents shall come. Greetings. Know ye that Michael Savage is hereby commissioned an admiral in the Texas Navy.
Wow.
With all rights and privileges appertaining thereto, and with the duty of assisting in the preservation of the history, boundaries, water resources, and civil defense of the state. Notice the emphasis on the boundaries and history. Don't you love it?
It's great. Borders, language, culture worked right into it.
Yeah, thank you. Apparently they knew about that in those days. In testimony whereof I hereto sign my name and cause the seal of the state of Texas to be affixed at the city of Austin this 7th day of January 2010, Rick Perry, governor, with the seal of the state of Texas. Now, here I live in the state of California, and I'm persona non grata, where socialists and communists and Leninists of every stripe have destroyed this state. Isn't it astounding, Beowulf, that here I am, this New Yorker who is loved by the leaders of the state of Texas. Isn't that amazing to you?
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. Maybe you'll have to fly the Texas state flag on the boat from now on.
Instead of the Bear Republic, I'll fly the Texas Lone Star State.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic.
Wouldn't that be funny? No, I am an honorary Texan.
That's right.
This is amazing. And I have another moving comment to make that I didn't want to forget. He arrived from the airport. You know, we had gotten there a little earlier. I, of course, ate half my meal without telling him. I had the plates cleared. I am a compulsive eater. I had my eggplant, no cheese. I had some prosciutto. I said, take the plates away so it looks like we didn't even start. I drank a half a bottle of wine. And the congressman arrived in a rental car by himself, no bodyguards, no assistant, the real deal. Comes in, and he sits down, takes out his iPhone, and he said to Mrs. Savage and I, he said, would you mind? He said, I want you to see the light of my life. And he showed us a picture of his daughter, his 13-year-old daughter, on his iPhone. He said, would you mind? He said, shyly, if I call her to say her nightly prayers before we eat dinner. He said, well, I do it every night. I was astounded by it. And he leaned over to do it silently. I said, Congressman, you don't have to hide prayers from me. Can you imagine a man flies and calls his daughter to say prayers with her before she goes to bed? From anywhere he is in the country. Can you imagine that, Beowulf?
Oh, that's amazing. That's a real dad, a real man, and a real Texan.
Congressman John Culberson of Texas is one of the finest men I've ever met in my life. Not because he gave me the plaque and the 50 caliber ball from Alamo and one of the seven Lone Stars found, you know, on the battlefield. Those are great things. But the man's spirit came through at that dinner in ways that I'm trying to portray right now through a mirror of, you know, verbiage.
He's an amazing man. That's fantastic.
Well, his view of what America's facing is even more astonishing. He actually says, he said this at least five times at dinner, we have very little time to save America. You're playing a critical role. You may not even know it. We have very little time is left. He is convinced that President Obama is leading us directly into a European socialist state and will do so unless he is, you know, stopped in the legislature. And there are good men like him, by the way. Culberson's not alone. There are many others who are the true blue conservatives out there. And he's going to be giving us information on a regular basis, of the actual inside information on what these bills contain and what so-called, I have it in my hand now, Democrat health reform. This was put out by Mike Pence in August of 2009. A bill. You're not going to believe what this says in there, Beowulf. You can't believe this. What it does. No matter how much money you make, you can't buy your own health insurance. You have to buy government insurance. Did you know that?
Yeah, I had heard. My God.
Section 1233 makes end-of-life care consultations eligible for Medicare reimbursement. Exactly what we've been hearing. In other words, the government will decide who gets the health care and who doesn't.
My God.
Section 412 imposes an 8% tax on jobs for firms that cannot afford to purchase a bureaucrat-approved health coverage. Can you believe this?
Jesus. And he's still trying to push it through this week. He's starting a whole new effort to do it.
Yeah. Can you believe it? Even though the American... You know, as Michelle Bachmann said at the CPAC, she said, remember what the Constitution said. They rule with the consent of the governed. Now you have an out-of-control ruling class in America, Manchurian candidate in the eyes of some, Barack Obama, who says, let the governed be damned. We will do what we want. We will ram anything through that we want. The governed mean nothing to us. If that is not a dictatorship, I'd like to know what is. See, if he's not stopped on this health reform with such public sentiment against it, Think of what will happen when he wants to create his private militia. Let's say armed Black Panthers, shall we say, giving weapons to Acorn workers to go to everyone's door. You want to have a nightmare scenario? And what is he going to do it the same way that he's doing the health care reform, against the will of the governed? Well, that's it. This is all tied into one of the most exciting nights of my life. I've met some congressmen before, but they never lit my fire like this man did. And tonight there's a small fundraiser for him in a private home that I may attend. So I'll have more to report tomorrow right here on the Savage Nation. MichaelSavage.com. It's one man's opinion. Don't take it too seriously. It's only the truth. And I realize that the truth is of no value to most of you. You want to hear what you want to hear, many of you. Some of you really want to hear what I really think. If I could throw a joke in now and again, fine.
Savage.
The left wing would have you think that teaching kids abstinence in school is a lost cause. Better yet, that if you teach children to abstain from sex, they will only try it sooner and more often. Well, joining us today from the Heritage Foundation is Christine Kim, who says many studies show otherwise. Christine Kim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Well, thank you, Michael, for having me on the show. I guess I'm here to talk about the latest study that just came out. It was published by the Archives of Pediatrics and Adolescent Medicine. It's a publication by the American Medical Association. Basically, the new study shows that abstinence education was effective in reducing teen sexual activity. Specifically, what the study did was looked at an 8-hour abstinence-only intervention program given to middle school kids, and 2 years later, the study followed up and surveyed these kids, and they found that kids who had received this abstinence education program were a third less likely to have initiated sexual activity, so the program delayed sexual activity among these middle school students, and they were also less likely to be currently sexually active compared to a group of students who didn't have any sex education. They were, quote-unquote, the control group that just participated in a general health promotion class. The study also found that these kids who attended the abstinence education were no less likely to use contraception, even though abstinence education does not promote contraception at all. By contrast, the study, it also looked at two other types of interventions, a safe sex program that only promoted contraception and a comprehensive sex education intervention that had both an abstinence component as well as a contraception component. These programs did not delay sexual activity or reduce recent sexual activity. Moreover, even though they had an emphasis on contraceptive use, kids who attended these programs were not more likely to contracept. So these programs failed at what they were proposing to do. This study is interesting because it focused on a group of middle school students that were on average about 12 years old. They attended public schools in a low-income sort of communities of a northwestern U.S. city. And it was important because used a very sophisticated research design called a randomized controlled experiment. And basically what the study design did was it randomly assigned kids to attend abstinence education or safe sex or comprehensive sex education in a control group, the health promotion class only.
Well, what does that do?
What that does is eliminate any sort of bias. These kids had no choice in what they attended. They attended because they were randomly assigned to it. So we know the results that come from the programs can be attributed to the programs and not to some other things that are going on in the background. And I think this is interesting because it adds to what we already know a lot about abstinence education. 2008 Heritage analysis, in fact, we just updated this analysis last week to include the study, show that about 12 out of the 16 studies that looked at abstinence education found that these programs were effective, or I should say that these studies reported positive behavioral change among teens. So something did happen because perhaps the students attended abstinence education. And so the weight of the evidence in this area is certainly very, very encouraging. Sadly, at the same time that we are seeing these emerging evidence that's very encouraging, Congress and President Obama have eliminated all federal funding for abstinence education in 2009. So right now there's $0 coming from the federal government for these programs. Instead, more money has been proposed to go into comprehensive sex education. In a 2008 study by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, it found that the department spent about $4 on comprehensive sex education for every dollar spent on abstinence education. So overall, the department spent spent about over $610 million on comprehensive sex education targeting teens versus about $170-some million on absence education. And since last year, with the elimination of federally funded programs, there are no dollars going to absence education and even more dollars going to comprehensive sex education. So the ratio is completely lopsided in this regard. So this new study is very important. It's a rigorous study. It shows that absence education is effective, and it's very encouraging news on this front. But sadly, Congress is not funding these effective programs. The Heritage Foundation, we do a lot of research on variety issues, and one of our focuses is absence education. We just actually put out a new paper, as I mentioned last week, that reviewed all the studies of absence education evaluation. We looked at 16 studies, and we found 12 of the 16 studies reported positive behavioral change among teens. And we have a number of other research on this particular topic as well, looking at the funding issue as well as the content of comprehensive sex education curricula versus absence education curricula. We also have research on what parents want, opinion polls of what parents want taught their kids, as well as parental involvement in this area and how it may act to prevent teen outcomes such as teen pregnancy, STDs, etc.
Christine Kim, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Okay, by now, my listeners know how important I feel the Tea Party movement really is. It is still growing, despite the media trying to label the movement as a bunch of right-wing nuts. And what seems like the GOP trying to change the direction of these parties, you know. Joining us today is someone who knows quite a bit about how this movement got started and hopefully where it is going. Our guest is Judson Phillips, the president of Tea Party Nation. Judson, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. I really do appreciate it.
How did you get started with this movement?
Well, I got started a year ago when I heard Rick Santelli's rant, but I heard people were going to be putting together some of these tea parties, and I started asking around, hey, is anybody doing any of this in the Nashville area? And nobody was doing one, and finally a friend of mine emailed me back and said, nobody's doing one, why don't you organize one? And I've always been one of those people, I'll jump first and check to see if the bungee cord is attached later. So we started, and basically in about a period of 4.5 days, put on the first rally, and that was February 27th, 2009. Put that on, we had about 600 people in downtown Nashville. It was a cold and dreary and damp day. But the people were there, they were fired up, they were angry, and then we rolled forward to Tax Day, and on April 15th, we had one of the largest rallies in the country, outside of the ones that Fox News was actively promoting. I think we had just about the largest. At noon on April 15th, 2009, we had over 10,000 people in downtown Nashville, and then that evening in the surrounding suburbs around Nashville, we had over 10,000 people at separate rallies there as well. And about that time, we also launched Tea Party Nation, which is focused around a social networking site called teapartynation.com, which we also call a home for conservatives, where, among other things, we do ban liberals. We got started, and Tea Party Nation has grown since we've got it started. And back last summer, we started talking about doing the national convention. Of course, just a few weeks ago, we had the National Tea Party Convention here in Nashville, which was just a huge success. The media, which had ignored the 9/12 march where we had millions up in D.C., just for a couple of days, it seemed like the political world was revolving around us because we had all the major networks, the minor networks. We had media from 13 different countries, and it was just absolutely incredible. And, of course, now we're going to Las Vegas this summer to do the same thing.
Did you ever think that your Tea Party group would get this large?
Oh, I tell you, if you had told me a year ago where I would be today, I'd really have two questions for you. What have you been drinking, and could I have a little of that, please?
Ha ha.
But when we started this, I had no idea. It's absolutely amazing, and I think none of us who are involved in this really had any idea where this would go. I have been involved in politics, and I'm probably, well, there's no probably to it. I am a minority in the Tea Party movement because so many people who are involved in this movement have never been involved in politics before. At the convention, one of the most poignant moments occurred when I was hosting a forum on the future of the Tea Party movement, and we had 600 people, or actually probably more than 600, in the room, and I looked out there and I asked these people, before the Tea Party movement, how many of y'all had never been involved in politics? Raise your hands. 98% of the people in that room raised their hands. You know, think about this for a second. These are people who had never been involved in politics before. And if you'd asked them a year earlier, would you be spending a fair bit of money to come to a political convention to talk about politics, to talk about activism? A year ago, had you asked them that question, they probably would have looked at you and suggested that you were nuts. But they were down here. They were fired up. They were enthused and ready to go out and just simply change the country. And so that seems to be the mood, at least coming out of the Tea Party convention, is these people are just excited. And I think none of them, and I'll say it for myself, none of us had any idea where this was going to end up.
Well, what are you trying to accomplish?
You know, there's a lot of issues that the Tea Party movement speaks to, but there's an underlying premise beneath all of them, and that is government doesn't listen to the people anymore. The people didn't want the TARP bailouts, the stimulus, the porculus. You know, we didn't want to be $4 trillion in debt. We don't want socialized medicine. We don't want cap and trade. I mean, the list just goes on of what we do not want. And what happens? The government keeps giving this to us, and we don't want it. And the big thing about the Tea Party movement, people have asked me, well, can you summarize in just, you know, a sentence or two what it's all about? And it's really easy to summarize. It's the fact that government is not listening to the people anymore. The government is usurping the rights of the people, going into things that it has no business going into, stealing the liberty and the wealth of the people. And if that sounds like a familiar theme, I think that was some of the general complaints our founding fathers had when they signed a little letter called the Declaration of Independence.
What do you see in the future, and are you worried that it seems that some in the Republican Party may be trying to co-opt the Tea Party movement?
Well, I am not worried about the Republican Party taking over the Tea Party movement. At the local level, at the grassroots level, a lot of folks who are involved in the Tea Party movement are also involved in the Republican Party. So there's a lot of overlap there. As far as the RNC, which is separate and apart from the Republican Party, I mean, they don't get us. They really don't. And so I'm not really worried about them either. Now, where does the Tea Party movement go? The simple fact of the matter is we have a couple of endgames, endgame 2010, endgame 2012. Endgame 2010 is we have to elect a conservative Congress this November. That's just not a negotiable point. It has to be done. It's the only way we will stop the Obama-Pelosi-Reid axis of fiscal evil. In game 2012, we must put a conservative in the White House. We also have some other things that we have to do, too. You know, we've got to, at the state and local level, start putting good conservatives into office and getting some of these people to get into office and suddenly realize how cool it is to start spending other people's money. We've got to get these people out, and we've got to replace them with good leadership. And for the Tea Party movement to ultimately be successful, what has to happen is not simply that we go in and win in 2010 and 2012, and then we all pick up our toys and go home. This has to be sort of a long-term movement to change the direction of the country to get good conservative leadership in right now, not only at the federal level, which is, of course, what everybody seems to think about, but also at the state and local level, too, because at the state and local level, they actually have a more dramatic impact on our lives than the feds do.
Well, what is your group doing next?
What we're doing next, July 15th through the 17th in Las Vegas, we're doing the National Tea Party Unity Convention. And what that is, it's a convention that's going to be a little bit different from what we did in Nashville. For one thing, it's going to be bigger. In Nashville, the focus of the event was on the leadership. We wanted to offer leaders training and networking opportunities. And we, just for technical reasons, we had to limit the size of the convention. For the event in Las Vegas, we're going to try and bring more people in, provide more opportunities, not only for leaders of the movement, but also for people who want to work in the movement but don't necessarily want to be a leader of a group. The other thing we're going to try and do, and the reason it's called the National Tea Party Unity Convention, is we want to try and get a lot of these groups together who have may have never gotten together before, and we all need to be singing on the same sheet of music here. And that doesn't mean we give up our individual groups or anything like that, but the thing we need to be doing, we don't need to be sniping at each other. you know, we've got enough problems with Obama, Pelosi, and Reid. They're the ones we need to be directing our efforts against and not against each other. So that's the big thing that's coming up in Las Vegas in July.
Well, why Las Vegas?
Well, a number of reasons. I mean, there's a practical reason. Vegas is a convention city, and we can, from a, just a strictly business point of view, you can get a good deal there. But as a practical matter, Obama has said a couple of times, don't go to Vegas. Harry Reid's from Vegas. It doesn't get any better than that. We need to give Harry Reid an early retirement party. And we also need to send a message to the president saying, you don't sit there and tell people, stay away from a city that is so dependent on tourism. And, of course, the other thing is so many of the events that have been done so far have been focused on the East Coast. There hasn't been a whole lot done out on the West Coast, and we had a lot of requests from people that said, hey, would you do something out west? So Vegas just seemed to us to be the logical choice to go to, and so we're looking forward to going there in July. One of the things we hope that we were able to do with Nashville and also want to be able to do with the Vegas convention is to give people tools that we know will work. If you do this, this will work. If you do this, here's how you put together a group. Here's how you organize a precinct. Here's how you get a voter registration drive going that gets you good conservative voters. You know, and that's just a tip of the iceberg on some of the things that we want to do. And so if we can equip these people with good tools that they can put in their tool belt to go out and do things, rather than having to try the hit-or-miss approach that a lot of us, what we might call the first generation of the Tea Party folks, you know, when we got started last year, you know, we were kind of doing a hit-miss thing, and now we've learned a lot, and there's new leaders coming up all the time, and they can learn from what we've done in the past that has worked and also what has not worked. And so we get these folks together and give them the good ideas. Why do something that we know isn't going to work when we can give you a dozen good ideas that do work that will help you move forward?
Judson Phillips, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, thanks for having me on. It's been great. I'm a fan of the Savage Nation, and you know, our website is teapartynation.com, and you'll notice there's a similarity between the Savage Nation and Tea Party Nation. To be honest, you were some of my inspiration for that. Thank you so much.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
We heard her earlier in the program, but I want you to hear some more of Michelle Bachmann speaking at CPAC last week. Here is the great congresswoman talking about the basis of our form of government.
We hold these truths self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That's our mission statement. That's the American mission statement. It's our creed. It's the essence of who we are as a people. We are creatures made by God. God gave us rights. These are rights that government can never give to us. And the beauty of that is that these are rights that government can never take away from us.
Well, she's right. They cannot take it from us. Michelle Bachmann knows the American story.
It's a beautiful story, this American story. John Quincy Adams went on to say in his speech, never before in the history of man had there been an example of a government directly and expressly instituted on this principle of consent by the governed. What a concept. I mean, just imagine. You mean like if two-thirds of the American people repudiate a policy like the job-killing government takeover of health care? You mean like government might listen? Yes, that's exactly what the founders were thinking. Exactly.
And what are the others in the Republican Party doing? Kissing up to Michelle Obama. Listen to Mike Schmuckabee.
The First Lady of the United States is doing her best to fight and defeat childhood obesity through her Let's Move campaign. I had a wonderful opportunity to visit with Mrs. Obama to talk about her initiative. Mrs. Obama, thank you very much for joining me here today. Your initiative, the Let's Move initiative, mm-hmm. I want to ask you, is your passion for Let's Move primarily a policy passion, or is it a parental passion because you're a mom?
It went on and on.
You and the president have modeled, I think, a magnificent picture of marriage. And I mean this sincerely. And I've been so very grateful that you have shown the rest of America that your family still matters, that you may have the most important job in the world, as your husband does, but he takes time to be with you and to spend time with you as his wife, and he still dotes on those beautiful children of yours. Thank you for making that an important part of the American message, and I mean that sincerely.
My God, it was one long loving, sort of like the one Colin Powell had for Barack Obama.
Because of his ability to inspire, because of the inclusive nature of his campaign, because he is reaching out all across America, he has both style and substance. He has met the standard of being a successful president, being an exceptional president.
Any regrets about endorsing Barack Obama?
None whatsoever. I think it was the right choice when the nation voted for him by almost a 10 million person majority.
I don't think it would be such a landslide if the election were held today. Let's go to the callers for a moment. Richard in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
How you doing, Michael? Listen, you're worrying me a little bit. I want to see you back at Katz's Restaurant on House.
Wait, why am I? I'm worrying you good or I'm worrying you bad?
You're worrying. I'm afraid that you're going to get palpitations of the heart over here.
How did the big families in the 30s? All live or survive without health care for every ache and pain. How was that possible, Richard?
Because if you didn't have it, I mean, you were...
Yeah, that's right. If the government gave it to you, you took it. You went like a crank to every doctor, three a day. You had an ear doctor, a nose doctor, a behind doctor, a foot doctor, a head doctor, an eye doctor, because the government pays for it. Because who is encouraging this? The AMA.
Yeah, well...
My mother used to say, Richard, I come from immigrant parents. My mother was a strong woman. So she once said to me, when I started complaining once, she said to me, she said, what do you think? I don't have aches and pain. She said, stop it already. You know, forget about it. Just don't even think about it. You know what? They go away. What's the big deal?
Well, they had children on the sixth floor walk up on Mulberry Street. They didn't go to hospitals at that point in time. But here's the point that I'm...
Right. They told them not to be a sissy if they got sick.
That's right. Well, they pointed...
you're laughing because they did. If a boy started to complain too much, and I'm sniffled, this and that, cut it out, will you? What are you, your sister? Go to school already. Just take a tissue.
Well, if you weren't there to play stickball or Ring Alivio, they poked fun at you. That was worse than anything.
Ring Alivio. Well, you really go back a long way. Do you remember, you're going to bring, I don't want to do the old man nostalgia hour here, but wait a minute. Did I tell this story? Do you remember this story, Richard, at all, the sleigh riding story on Bryan Avenue?
Vaguely.
Let me tell you the story because it's amazing to show you what kids can live through. There was a kid who had an uncle. The uncle was like 18. You know, in those days, people got married young or whatever. The uncle was 18. We must have been 8, 9. I don't know how old. So he's like, oh, let's go sleigh riding. So we get up on the sled on Bryant Avenue, and we live on Longfellow down below, a big street, cobblestone, heavy snow. And the far, I think, yeah, he's on the bottom, the uncle. Then my friend and I was on top of him, and we jump on the sled. We start going down the hill. The uncle loses control of the sled, and it goes underneath the wheel. I could to this day see the wheels. You remember those trucks in those days? Some of them were monstrous with chain drive.
Yeah, I remember that.
Chains on the a chain drive truck. We went under the truck's wheel and came out the other side. I never told my mother about it because she would have screamed and had a fit. Those are the things that we did. Big deal. We went to Hubert's Flea Circus. We survived. Went to Coney Island and saw the Wax Museum. We survived from the most horrible exhibits of murderers, mass murderers, monsters. Nobody had to give us balloons and candy when we came back or see a therapist. The reason we didn't go to a school therapist is A, there were none, and B, if we did, they were probably crazier than the craziest person on the block. Most of the school psychologists, you know, are more sick than Metesky the Mad Bomber.
Oh, no, I agree. You know, you talk about the wax figures. It springs into mind that Nancy Lugosi, she looks pretty close to a wax figure. I remember those.
Do you think Madame Tussauds will actually put Nancy Pelosi in wax? She has to be. She's the first woman speaker of the House.
No.
So she's already in. She's probably already in wax in London. Luckily, I'm banned in Britain. I don't have to look at it.
You know, you talk about the chains on the old trucks. I remember...
I've got to ask you the most important question. There's only one thing I'm interested in. How old is the oldest person in your family ever lived? How old?
88.
That's not good enough. I expect an Italian at least 100. My mother went to 88. Were they healthy in the last 20 years, or everything was wrong?
They were all basically healthy.
You said you're worried about my health. That's why I asked. I went to a doctor the other day, a cardiologist. He had checkups. He says to me, I want the next 20 years of your life to be high quality, or quality of life is more important than anything. I don't know what he meant by that. What do you mean? They don't want to give me medication for anything? I don't get that. What do you mean quality of life? I don't even know what quality of life means. I've suffered from the day I was born. What do you mean quality of life? I'm like Mother Teresa of the radio. Play some music for a minute. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
She wore blue velvet, bluer than velvet was the night, softer than satin was the light from the stars.
This is the Savage Nation.
She wore
savage.